So anybody who's watching the recording, there are thousands of people in the room. So if you hear all of the applause and the cheering and it's overwhelming our audio, that's what it is. All right.
Standing room only.
Standing room only. So, hello, welcome to SPC 231. It's a very intimate group. If you guys want to, we can all huddle up front and do Q&A and do whatever we want to and customize the session. But my name is Jeremy Chapman. I'm a director in the Office 365 team. You might say that my middle name is Click to Run. I've helped build out Office 365 Pro Plus, the new packaging that we use in terms of getting all of that installed, how we modify that, how we update that, all the things that we do to get Office experiences onto the desktop. And along with that, obviously, goes the native apps on all the mobile devices. So if you're up here, and you probably listened to us talk as we're getting set up, I have an Android phone, I have two Surfaces, I have a Dell XPS 12, I have an iPad, we have a Dell Venue 8 Pro. All these things we're going to use as part of the presentation, because Office and Office 365 Pro Plus is really about getting Office experiences for every user. Now, the way we're going to structure this, and I'm going to have you vote, all of you, I have a 48-slide PowerPoint deck, or I have a one-slide PowerPoint deck with a bunch of demos. Who votes for 48 slides of PowerPoint? Who votes for one slide and no PowerPoint? Wow, it is unanimous. If you're watching the recording, that was 1,000 hands simultaneously going up to talk about that. Now, Brent, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, so before I introduce myself, a lot of you may also know Jeremy from the Garage series. So Jeremy is Mr. Office, so if you don't know about the Garage series, you should. We have a booth set up in the expo hall, and there's lots of content online already. So my name is Brent Witchell, and I'm a field person with Microsoft. I'm a technology specialist. I cover all things productivity. I'm located in the southeast, so I cover everything from Miami all the way up to the upper end of the Carolinas. And my role today is really to kind of be the voice of the customer. So I get in front of customers every day. I actually have had Jeremy on the phone with customers as we walk through a lot of the things we're going to talk to you about today. So we're going to kind of feed off of each other and walk through, again, a lot of great content that I think you, whether you're a developer, an end user, or an IT pro, are going to be really interested in.
Right, so the first question we hear a lot is, why should I care and where should I start? Those are the first two questions I'll get, and you'll probably get as well. And anybody thinking that right now, why should I even care about the new way that Office is installed and also the new parts around Office, kind of around the periphery of it?
Right.
And we're going to cover all of that. And it's one of the great things with Office 365 Pro Plus, as well as any of the individual workloads, whether it's Yammer, whether it's the new OneDrive for Business, you can start with the one discrete workload. One of the great things with this is if anybody has SharePoint on-premises, anybody using SharePoint on-prem right now? I think most people. Anybody using SharePoint online exclusively? Nobody. So right now, this is one of the great workloads where you can basically have all your data continue to be stored in SharePoint on-premises. You can get all the value in terms of being able to get to your files, assuming that they've got permissions to reach those files, manage all the controls around them, and be able to basically manage the client services so they can use Office on iPhones, on Android phones, on their Windows devices, be able to move from device to device, also in the browser, and access all of their work from anywhere.
Yeah. And in fact, Jeremy, I would add, you know, I see a lot of customers that pick one workload, right? So when it comes to the cloud and maybe putting your toe in the water, we've seen, for example, customers like British Airways who have looked at workloads like social. So they will go and take social, bring in Yammer into the environment, and that's kind of their toe in the water with regards to getting into that cloud and having some quick wins with their end users for offering some value using our new services, right? However, and we have some case studies I think you have on the screen here, maybe?
I've got the British Airways case study here. This is pretty much how every customer starts. They don't go in both feet first, typically. They'll go in and do one workload.
Yeah.
Often it will be Link that will excite them. They want to get out of their, maybe their PBX systems, their current telephony. They want to get out of their current instant messaging services, all of those things, and have more robust services around online meetings, those types of things. They'll start with Link, both feet first. We think of Sephora, they were like that. British Airways was great in terms of having Yammer. If we look at Coles in Australia, they had 100,000 plus seats deployed in the first couple of months using SharePoint Online because they have all these different retail store vendors that are feeding their ecosystem in terms of getting groceries into their different retail environments. So all of these are great examples of when I start with one piece, and then I can broaden that out to the other workloads later. And the nice thing is there's a lot of shared components here. We're going to talk about that as part of the deployment model. And we talk about identity. We're going to talk about it with the kind of the fast-track approach to how we think about identity.
Yeah.
All of these things apply to all the different workload aspects, whether it's just the clients, if you want to do Office 365 Pro Plus, if you want to start with a federated Yammer. And part of the SharePoint 2013 SP1 announcements was that now you can use Yammer integrated as part of your on-premises SharePoint. So I can have that one jump-off point in the Yammer if I want to. And I don't have to worry about having all of the other stuff that goes with it if I don't want to have the rest of the Office 365 workloads.
Right.
Maybe I just want Yammer. Maybe I just want OneDrive. That's also possible now with on-premises SharePoint. So all that's very cool stuff in terms of being able to start.
Yeah.
Now, the way I wanted to structure this first is I wanted to talk about the deployment model. So let's switch over to our Surface and do some inking on that.
Yeah, and while you're setting that up, I will say, so we talked about putting your toe in the water with a workload. What I see more and more is customers very interested in that first step, that first toe in the water being with Office 365 Pro Plus. So as Jeremy mentioned, you do have the ability just to leverage the cloud for deployment. And there's a ton of value associated with deploying Office, the rich client bits from Office 365. So we're going to go into some of those, some of that value.
Right. So when we think about our fast track deployment process, if you want to go to fasttrack.office.com, all the resources are there. It's all step by step. But the way that you would talk to, you know, anybody IT pros on your team that want to be able to, they're dimming the lights for us, that would want to be able to have any of these service. Let's actually change the pen color because we can do all of that too. The Surface Pro, that will make it even more contrasty. So we can go in from pilot, for example, where we're just using pure Cloud ID. If we want to test it, we want to pilot with our IT department, we just want to get a couple people up and running. Maybe it's the OneDrive integration with my native SharePoint. Maybe it's Office 365 Pro Plus. We can start out with Cloud ID, then we can do something called password hash sync, and we can filter that if we want to, just to that OU or that small group of IT professionals or IT department individuals who want to deploy that as the first kind of wave of deployment within the organization. And later when we get to enhance, that's when we do things like federation and ADFS. So we've kind of changed and flipped the way we think about deployment to really go, instead of going for all the integration before that first seat is even touched, start out, get some value out of it, start using it with Cloud ID, do things like if you are doing mail, link your mailboxes
right.
So mail will flow.
So the connected accounts, like when you're in the pilot stage, right? That is sometimes the first thing that people want to see is, hey, what is the mail experience?
Right.
And so one of the things you can do in that pilot phase is to do a connected mailbox, so you can go ahead and see what mail feels like coming into your client apps from the cloud.
Right, so that's part of the deployment model. That applies, again, to all the different service workloads. Now, when we think about if we move beyond that, and we think about how the different audiences will react to Office 365 Pro Plus, really, I want to take this presentation and focus on three different audiences, users, devs, and IT pros, because there are advantages, and there's a lot of work that's been done to help the user experience, to help the developer experience, and the IT pro experience in terms of getting Office 365 Pro Plus deployed. And I think the best way to do that is to show all of these services running across all the devices that we have up here, because we have representation of Windows, iOS, Android, you know, Windows 8, store apps, all those things that are running. Because really the key to all of this is the fact that if I go into users, users have multiple devices. Anybody in here have a Windows machine? Hopefully everybody has one. Anybody in here have an iOS device of any type? You don't be shy. Anybody in here have an Android device of any type? Right, so all these things need to be connected. So the connected fabric of all of this and the stuff that's exclusive to Office 365 Pro Plus, if I think about it, maybe it's me or it's Brent and we're the happy user in the middle. I might have all these different, I might even have more than one Windows machine. Let's say I've got two or three different Windows machines, and I might have PC, Mac, oops, my handwriting isn't the best, or PC. That's great. How do I move from that one device to the other device? How do I have my identity, my one user account, be responsible for the activation of all three of those devices? And if you're the guy from the procurement team, The beauty of all this is I pay for one license.
Right.
And it's available to me on all the devices that I use.
Yeah, and in the old days, with the old deployment method, it was per device license. So if you had three computers, you had to buy three, or your procurement people had to buy three copies of Office.
Right, and then in addition to all those, I might have an Android phone, an iPhone, and an iPad where I want to use all of these things. Now, how do I keep that whole world together? You know, I used to be in the Windows team. I worked with analysts from Forrester, like Frank Gillette, who spent their entire careers, to some extent, or the years of their careers, saying, how do I go across all these different devices? How do I manage that multiple device life that I'm leading now that I have sometimes three, sometimes four, sometimes six or seven devices I personally brought to, let's see, I think eight devices with me that are all internet connected that can all roam Office settings to all of them right here to this event. And so you think about that, you think about all the people out there that might have even three, how do I keep my life organized in order to do all this? Now what that means is we need to be able to roam that user's settings. We need to be able to roam links to his files wherever they are. If you're using Office 365, the beauty of all of this is that what I can do if I want is actually have the cloud as the connective tissue for storage that will actually let me store all of my data to these devices that may or may not be domain joined. So the nice thing is it's bridging content, so I've got controls over the content, the access policies, all that stuff to be able to get to those files. But with all these devices now, Office 365 in that case could be the bridge to let me in there. If you're not doing Office 365, then you have to open up your SharePoint storage and all those things and the ability for those files to be accessed by these devices. The nice thing is, though, as long as the file is stored in an HTTP path, we will store that setting and we'll roam that from your phone to your tablet to your PC to your Mac so you can get to those, to your browser, if you're on a Chromebook even, so you can get to all of those files that you've been working on. So it's great in terms of user accessing files and in terms of IT being able to control who has access and how that looks in terms of working on those files.
So if I'm an Office 365 Pro Plus subscriber, you're saying that I have the ability to install Office, whether it be Office, the rich native client on Mac and a PC, mm-hmm. up to five, and then I can install an additional five on my iOS device, on my iPad, on my iPhone, and my Android phone, and Windows phone comes with the Office Hub, which is the exact same capabilities that you would get on those other phone devices, smartphones.
Right, so I have all of that capability. If I go into, and I'm in the admin console here, I'll go straight into the admin console, but this would be the same on any user. So maybe the user doesn't have any other services deployed. You haven't got Exchange Online or anything else. You just have Office there. They would only see a link to their Office settings if they don't even have OneDrive configured. They can go straight to their software tab and be able to see exactly what they have installed, which is nice. So I can go ahead and look at where I've got Office installed on any of the devices that I'm using. It could be a Mac, it could be a PC. Here I've got a couple of Windows 8 machines, a couple of Windows 8.1 machines. The nice thing is here as well, I can get to deep links if I want to that will let me install right from the iOS App Store, right from the Android App Store, or the Windows Phone 8 App Store, to be able to install Office Experiences on all those devices.
So here's a question. What if I'm at my in-laws for Thanksgiving,
okay,
and my manager says, hey, Brent, I need you to make an edit to this PowerPoint, the latest and greatest version of this deck that we're going to go present to a customer,
mm-hmm.
and I check out my in-laws' machine, and they have PowerPoint 2003. So I want to have the latest and greatest PowerPoint. Being an Office 365 Pro Plus subscriber gives me access to another brand new capability.
Right.
And Office on Demand.
This is one that only works with Office 365 Pro Plus. And the great thing is here, and I'll go ahead and launch to another diagram of how that works. When I go to my OneDrive site, if I launch even a web app or an Office Online or PowerPoint Online or Word Online, any of those apps, it will say edit in Word or edit in the web app. Or edit in the online app, sorry. We've just changed the name, I'm still getting used to that.
Right.
And what will happen is, if you don't have a version that the browser in the Office 365 portal likes, it will actually be able to provision a temporary copy of Excel, PowerPoint, Word, Publisher, or access right to that machine pretty much instantaneously using streaming at the back end. All of that will be stored down to the user profile. So the way that works, and I'll go ahead and change back to our Surface. So if you think about, we have our user profile. I'm going to just draw the shortcut to that. So I have the user profile. I'm going to go ahead and store all of the Office application that I need, whether it's Word, Excel, PowerPoint. It even prefetches the additional apps. So just if I happen to want to launch PowerPoint, later after I've launched Excel, typically within about a minute, I'll have an Excel experience running down. It will go to the user profile. And I say user profile because it's important. It's a transient install. It's basically there temporarily. When I leave that machine, if I'm at my mother-in-law's house, and let's say she wants to go back in and use Office or whatever 3 hours later, it will have removed itself from the machine and wiped itself off of that computer. It won't have activated it, and that's all intentional because we don't want to have maybe your mother-in-law accessing the files that you have cached on that machine. So we also remove the ability to do temporary cache. So basically on any computer, beyond my five that I can install, and that's the limit in terms of concurrent activated installs, I can have five across PC or Mac. I can have five more across all my mobile OS devices.
And then this is unlimited.
This is unlimited. This is something that doesn't have an upward bound to it. It has an upward bound if I give away my credentials to 10,000 people and they all log in at the same time. We've got some heuristics at the back end that will say whether or not you're involved in these types of shady things. But if I want to go to a machine every day or two per day and log in separately and have Office stream down, this is a great solution to that temporarily.
Yeah.
What it doesn't work for, and this is one thing that we hear a lot from people, anybody use Citrix XenApp or remote desktop services? So technically this works in Citrix XenApp or remote desktop services, but it's not something you want to do. Why? Because you'll be downloading up to 600 megabytes per user profile who's on that server. If I've got a server with good utilization, I might have 30 to 50 people on it. Think about 30 to 50 times 600. I'm not great at math, but that sounds like a lot of information that you don't want to have going over your pipe. So the other thing that's really cool about all of this is that we can control who can get to what. Now, what I want to do also is I want to make sure that we're staying on user now.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that I talk about all of the different user things that I can do in terms of roaming settings, in terms of being able to do things, not just install Office, but also how it's integrated with SharePoint. Because we're here at the SharePoint conference.
Right.
We have to make sure that we show all of that work as well.
Yeah, and one quick thing about the Office on Demand. Customers ask me a lot, what's the requirement from the PC, like my in-law's PC? And so you just need Windows 7 or Windows 8 for that to be leveraged.
They're the same system requirements that you need to install Office. One thing that we hear a lot is it's streamed. It must not even be running on the local PC. I can't use it because I have add-ins. The installation's streaming, but once it's been streamed the one time on the device, it's local. It's fully local.
Right.
It works with your add-ins. It works with all of your customizations. It works with that stuff that you've built. Even ribbon customizations I might have done in Office 2010.
Yep.
All of that will show up directly into the Office 2013 era of Office 365 Pro Plus apps. They just work. The extensibility model is the same. Now, one of the things I want to show here is in terms of, let's say I've got my Word document open. Here I've got a theme applied. I've got my circuits. I'm logged into my demo account, officegarage.onmicrosoft.com. You can see that I don't have the white UI because a lot of people will give us feedback saying, Office, it's so white, it's burning my eyes. What can I do? One of the nice things with roaming settings is once I'm signed into any device, let's say I've got the dark gray theme, it's going to be pervasive across all the devices where I sign in. The important part here is that all of these documents stored in either OneDrive or SharePoint are also roaming with me from device to device. Memorize this list because you're going to see it in a minute on the Android phone and on the iPad.
Right.
So I can pick up this and I can start working. Let's say I want to go through my marketing goals for QT series or my prog tour, whatever I want to do. I can pick that same file up. We'll go ahead and show that. Let's say I want to go into my prog tour. I'll go to New Orleans Trip Report because it's got a picture of a crocodile, I think. Sorry, an alligator because we're talking about Louisiana, not Australia. But there we go. We've got our trip report. And we got a photo. We got all that stuff in there. Now it's going to go to the top of my list of roaming documents because
right.
It's the most recently viewed document. Now the cool thing is when I go back to my Android phone. I can launch into Office Mobile, and this is just part of the normal Google Play App Store, and I'll be able to see the same stuff. I've got my marketing goals. I should have my New Orleans trip report. Let me just update this. Should be able to pull down and update that. Sometimes a little bit difficult when I'm doing the updates on demand here on this network, but I don't have...
Do you have a signal? It looks like you have
I need to connect to Wi-Fi. Once I connect to Wi-Fi, I lost Wi-Fi. So let me connect to Wi-Fi, because that will help in terms of... Hold on.
Yeah, and while you're doing that, one of the things I'll mention is, let's Wi-Fi. Say that he had done this in the opposite direction, where he's editing this on his Android phone, and then he opens it up on his PC. He'll get a nice little welcome back. So we really are intentional about making sure that we follow exactly what you've been doing, no matter what device, where you are at any time, so that when you come back to a rich experience on your PC, we'll actually welcome you back and say, hey, would you like me to take you to the place where you were previously editing it? And so think of the ease in which that, as an end user, allows you to go from, you know, I'm working on a proposal at work, and now I go home and I'm on a PC at home using the, you know, one of my five licenses that I have for Office 365 Pro Plus. And as soon as I open it up, it'll say, hey, welcome back.
There we go.
Right to where you're editing.
All right, so now I'm able to launch, as you saw, my New Orleans trip report right from my phone. The same documents, again, this was basically all filtered down to, and that will rotate the screen if I want it to. This is all filtered down to the things that were in Word, on the Word view. But if I go into anything like OneDrive, and I'll go ahead and show that on the iPad, because even on the iPad, I can go in and see the same document. So let's go ahead and switch to our iPad device. And a few people said they had these out there. So we can go ahead and look at our iPad, which I think should be a little bit smooshed here on our projector. But that's OK. We can all see it. So I've got my brand new OneDrive for Business app. These same exact files are located on that. I can see. Let's see, make sure. My trip calendar, my trip report, my marketing goals, all of that stuff is there.
Pull down and see if it's...
Let me make sure that it's getting all of the... I'm signed in with Jeremy at Office Garage. All that stuff is there for me to work on. There's my marketing goals, my trip report, all that stuff there. I don't think it's saved any updates yet to my Bayou trip report, and it hasn't gone back as far back as some of the other stuff, but we can see all the other documents. And the great thing with OneDrive on this device is I can also store it locally. And one of the things I get asked all the time is, so you've got OneDrive on the iPad and on the iPhone. Let's say I've got that running an iOS device. Why don't you sync the entire document set? And the thing is, these devices have
very
sometimes
limited.
8, sometimes 16 gigs,
right.
Sometimes 32 gigs of storage. This will allow me to individually pull down applications if I need to jump on a plane and be able to see things without internet connection, or I want to make sure this is available to me when I go to my mother-in-law's house again,
right?
That I can edit that, because she might not have Wi-Fi, and I don't have a means of connecting to her network cable that's going into her cable box or whatever she's got there for internet.
Right. Or you're hopping on an airplane, and you're in the middle, and you don't want to pay for the GoGo network.
Any of those things. So the main point around this in terms of an end-user standpoint, all of this is back-ended by SharePoint, being able to store all of my files, being able to have the OneDrive affinity to where I'm working on anything, whether it's a Word document, PowerPoint, Excel, all those files that have HTTP paths, even if it's SharePoint Online, I can also roam links to all of that stuff. The main thing is that I can be productive on any device. I can
Right.
get back to my work and be able to edit documents. I can see anything that I need to see there.
Yeah, and a huge value add, by the way, is obviously on a phone, a smartphone, whether you're on a Windows phone, an iPhone, or an Android phone, you're going to be limited to what you can do. It's not the full rich Windows, you know, the Office suite running on your phone. So one of the things that we really tout very proudly is the fact that we preserve all the file fidelity of that document or that spreadsheet or that PowerPoint presentation. So typically it's very good viewing, light editing, but no matter what you do to that document, when you open it back up in the web browser, right, in Office Online, or whether you open it up on your rich PC or on Office for the Mac, it will look as you would expect it to look. So again, being able to open it up, take it offline across different devices, being connected to all of your content, having it follow you. And so if you are a user and you walk into work with your phone, chances are your organization, or if you are the IT pro, we'll get to you guys in a minute. But from a user perspective, you're going to want to be able to be productive on any device. And so you can see how we've really invested in making sure that no matter what the device is, you're going to have a rocking experience, right? I always tell customers that the best experience will always be on a rich PC with the full Office suite. But man, we are unlocking some great scenarios across various devices.
Right, and here I'm logging into a browser. Now, obviously, this is an Internet Explorer. This is a Safari browser.
Yeah, the mobile browser, yeah.
The important thing is that we're also going to be able to see, let me make sure I'm going to log in. We can also see all of the files that are on our SkyDrive. It looks like I am connecting up in the upper left-hand corner, so let's make sure that, there we go. We'll be able to see that it's actually seen the browser type. When I go into my OneDrive site, I'll be able to view that with a nice touch-friendly layout, so internet connection speeds permitting, that we can do this. We're on the SharePoint 14 network as well. But basically, I can go to even a browser-enabled device, maybe where I don't have anything installed. Maybe it's a kiosk or a shared machine. Here I can see, again, the same files, the same stuff from my Jeremy account. I can see anything that's recent. I can see anything that is shared with me. There's my New Orleans trip report again. I should be able to see my alligator. All of that stuff, let's hope that we see our alligator opening up in a web, or sorry, I can open it up in a web app. I can open it up in the native HTML viewer of this device. All that stuff, very easy to get back to, all very touch optimized. And one of the cool things that we have here with the iPad and with any mobile device that's registering itself as a mobile browser is that we've actually lit up the OneDrive and the Sites buttons inside of OWA. So anybody who's installed OWA for iPhone or iPad, they've seen Calendar, they've seen Outlook, they've seen People as the main three buttons. That's usually what you'd see when you click on the lower left-hand corner there. But also, we can, because we're using HTML, we can go right into what you're able to access from a OneDrive or a Sites perspective, because now you're authenticated into a web page.
Right.
So the cool thing is, from a kind of a future-looking perspective, the OWA for iPhone, the OWA for iPad app are using essentially a wrapper around this HTML
code. Same code base, yeah.
And all of this can be used, and this is the other cool part, can be used and stored offline. So one of the other settings that not a lot of people know about is if you go into Mail, you can actually go in and store your inbox for offline use. So I can basically cache the link to get into the mailbox, and I'd be able to store, like I would normally in Exchange ActiveSync, a few days of mail right into my cache for HTML, which is encrypted and it's protected on that device.
Right.
So very cool stuff.
So triaging your email again on the airplane when you're offline.
And you can tell even here I've already got OWA for iPad installed on the device. But in this case it will tell me if there's an app for me that I can use in lieu of this. So it's even informing the user, hey, there's a better experience with a native app available for you there. One of the cool things when I do launch my OWA app, you'll see immediately it is PIN protected, just like it would be an Exchange ActiveSync. The nice thing is I can remote wipe just that application. So from an IT perspective, jumping forward to audiences, if I want to wipe most of the device that I care about in terms of the data that I own, the mail, I can wipe just the app. So I'm not getting rid of all of my photos, all the stuff, because if I'm doing bring your own device into the workplace, this is a huge user benefit in the fact that if my employer wants to wipe my device when I leave the company, he can kill all my calendar and email and all the stuff that he cares about, whereas my kids' photos, watching them grow up over the years, all that stuff stays there. If I haven't synced them to the cloud some other way, I would be pretty upset if somebody went and wiped my entire device and factory reset it to the original out-of-box state.
Yeah.
So all of this is...
One thing that I'd also mention is when you were back on the SharePoint site, we have these device channels basically in SharePoint Online that when you hit it with a device like an Android or an iPad, we automatically put it into that very touch-centric mode. So, and you'll notice that those new icons that were added, the sites and the OneDrive, one of the big pieces of feedback I hear from customers all the time is, you know, as we adopt SharePoint more and more, I participate in content that's spread throughout the organization. And so being able to go in and have quick access to that shared with me in a touch-centric manner, being able to go in and click on all the sites that you follow or are members of, is extremely valuable, again, on any device at any time.
And jumping forward into what's in it for developers,
right.
This is one of those things where I can be a developer, I can know kind of web development tools, all the modern ways in order to produce, whether it's SharePoint sites, whether it's, you know, other web services that I'm tying into, hooking into with Java, normal standards-based web development tools, I can do things like build apps that not only hit things like Outlook like we're seeing here, but the cool thing is, because I'm using essentially web services and iframes and all these different devices, the same code that I'm developing for, in this case, OWA as a custom app, let's say even if it's a mapping app, it sees an address, it does all that stuff. It's the same code that I'm using to modify the rich client. It's the same code I'm using to modify the browser-based application. So it's all very transferable in terms of where you're developing that code, in terms of where it can be used and utilized from an end-user standpoint. So you can have very predictable experiences across all these different entry points into Mail, for example. The same thing that you're doing there, you can develop apps for SharePoint. You can develop apps for Office as well. So all of these brand new developer capabilities tying into, again, web services are basically about essentially what you think of as kind of living the dream from a mobile device standpoint. I can make that device more powerful than the hardware that it's sitting on because I can tie into things like translation services. I can tie into things like mapping services. I can tie into things like, in our case, this is a really heavy-duty app that puts in one line of email. But even something like that or what we saw in the keynote where it actually does a bit more, these are things that I can develop across the entire platform. So very cool stuff, and the end user has a consistent experience across all of this stuff.
That's a great point. I used to be a pretty hardcore VBA developer, right? Word Basic back in the old days, and then Visual Basic for applications. Then I'd write COM add-ins. So there's tons of organizations that have these COM add-ins running around, right, and in the wild and helping run the business. And so one of the challenges there, when you think of our strategy, any device, anywhere, anytime access, that breaks down with things like COM add-ins because an iPad will never know what a COM add-in is, right? MacBook will never know what a COM add-in is. So we see developers really jumping on this new app model for Office. So you can render the same type of capabilities, but know that when you're looking at that content, that you're using that new app for Office in, like there's a Bing Maps app that I demo a lot. When you drop that in a PowerPoint or in an Excel workbook, and then I save it out to OneDrive for Business, if I'm on an iPad and I view that same spreadsheet in the browser, I'll see the exact rendering that I would get on my PC because it's HTML5 and JavaScript. So that's really where we're going from a developer perspective. COM add-ins still work. In fact, when you think of the rich client experience with Office, one of the huge things that we'll get into from an IT perspective in a minute is the fact that when you deploy the new Office, we automatically pick up the old add-ins that are installed on the previous version of Office.
Right. So in my case, and this is actually cool because I don't even have 2010 on the box anymore.
Yeah.
So the nice thing with Click to Run, and we'll get to that when we talk about the IT Pro capabilities, is the fact that I can install it side by side with an older version of Office. So let's say I've got Office 2010 installed. Now the main thing is I want to make sure that all my stuff works. If I'm the developer, I'm going to be wanting to test that my COM or my browser helper objects or whatever I've got adding to or extending Office is going to continue to work. The nice thing with side-by-side is while you do that transition, you can run the older version of Office next to the newer version of Office. The only real rule there is that they're the same bitness, the same architecture, so they're both 32-bit or they're both 64-bit. But you can have that older version there running alongside the newer version. So you've always got a safety net to fall back to 2010 while you're transitioning. And I say while you're transitioning because you don't want to have any app doing, you know, I should say two things being done by multiple applications in any case,
right.
Whether it's video playing or viewing Word docs, eventually you want to get down to one app like I've done in my case. But here I've got my Office 2010 tab that I actually built in Office 2010. Because it's loading basically my user profile app data folder where the customization is, the Office UI, .office UI file, which essentially is an XML that tells me what the different controls that I had in there were, it can pull that in directly into my 2013 Office experience without any additional customization from me. The other thing is, if I had add-ins, let's say add-ins on the machine, I've got to send to Bluetooth add-in, which we've all known and loved since Office 2010, and I have the Office Remote add-in, but let's say I've got other add-ins that I've developed as line of business add-ins, those will load as well into Office 365 Pro Plus. So if you're a developer, not only do you have all this new app model stuff, But all of your old stuff will continue to work. That's the whole design of this. We've added all the extension points into Office so that it behaves like a natively installed app, because essentially it is a natively installed app. We say streaming, but that streaming is basically during initial install and maybe during a once-a-month servicing where you get some of the benefits of streaming that content versus waiting for it to all be there at once. But once it's there, once it's on the hard drive, I can take it offline. I can go into an airplane. I can have no internet connectivity. It's not streaming in the sense that a lot of people think it is in terms of video streaming and other types of streaming out there.
The other really big value add from a developer perspective, Jeremy, is think of when you have an update to your VBA com ad or your com add-in that you wrote, right? Then you have to redeploy that com add-in to everybody in the organization. With the new app for Office model, you update the catalog, and then that automatically trickles down. So from a user perspective, I don't have to have anybody deploy something to me. I go up to insert app for Office, and then magically all the things that my IT organization have exposed to me, I can go and pick and choose from. So yes. it's a great experience. Again, it allows those solutions to be leveraged on any device, and no more IT pros having to push out updates for those.
Move back to our kind of our developer, did all this inking stay on here? Our developer pillar of stuff that we've decided to not use PowerPoint for. Devs get to have portable code that moves between all the different device types, whether it is the browser, whether it's SharePoint, whether it's Office. They'll be able to have experiences that kind of matriculate across all these different device types. Let's face it, there aren't a ton of developers out there writing VB code these days that are still in IT,
right,
that are extending Office. So the great thing is I can write that code one time, and it will be able to be seen in an iOS device and across all the different platforms that I care about. Plus, from a kind of peace of mind perspective, safety net perspective, all the stuff that I've already written that might be business critical, those continue to work. So I get kind of the best of both worlds in terms of the add-in story for a developer. Now, if I move into IT Pro, and this is what I have spent most of my career talking about doing in terms of building out this setup and installation model, we have a lot of great stuff there to talk about as well, because where all of this, where the genesis of all this was, if I think about IT Pro, I've been doing desktop deployment pretty much since I joined Microsoft, and prior to that when I was an IT pro.
What happened?
I think it's just showing a little bit. It's giving us a stripe of the, I don't know if that's a feature of the Surface or something happening.
That's interesting. Okay.
But I'll try to work with that and just use that top edge of the Surface if I need to continue inking later. All right, so from an IT pro perspective, what happens when I deploy Office? So I need to test my add-ins typically. I need to make sure that I can roll that out, train users, inform them of the release, all the different things that I would do as an IT pro to give them a new version of Office. If you think about Office 365, we had the unique challenge of if I did want to entertain self-installation, which doesn't work for every organization. Usually you want to use something like System Center Configuration Manager, a managed software distribution tool. Altiris, you might want to use Microsoft Deployment Toolkit as part of your image rollout. However you want to deploy Office, that's got to work as well. But let's say, and this has been a cool use case I've seen more and more lately, you're an insurance company that has a bunch of affiliate offices, branches. They don't have their own IT, but they want to have the same email domain. They want to have the same SharePoint addresses. They want to have all that kind of file sharing and collaboration infrastructure, but nobody has IT. They don't have distribution points for SCCM and all the different branch offices. In those types of cases, it really works to do self-install. So in this case, we can enable self-install, and we can basically dictate the terms that we want to do it. We want the user to install completely from himself and self-update, and I'll run kind of the automatic update rules. Or we can even, if we've got some infrastructure, if we want to lead him to a portal that we manage, we can have him download some customized, tiny bit of customized files to download the version that we want. Just because we've tested it maybe with our add-ins and we've validated that build, we can do that. So we've changed the way that we install Office using this streaming, because we think about the old days of Office 365, and I say old, it's like a year and a half old. In the 2010 kind of era, you would download 700 megabytes of Office, which might take you 45 minutes, maybe 15 minutes if you're lucky, if you're on a good, big pipe connection. Then after that, you would spend between 15 and 30 minutes installing Office, and then maybe 45 minutes to an hour later, you'd have Office 2010 installed, all the relevant service packs, all the relevant patches, and all that stuff. Sometimes the servicing that went after the initial kind of RTM or SP1 release would need to be another 83 updates or something that you would install on top of that base package.
Always. It was always the service pack or something that would add on another 250 megs.
And part of that sign-in assistant that you would have seen in the old days, again, old as in like a year and a half ago, was it would pull down all of the updates that it wanted and sign up for automatic updates, scope down to Office. So you might have 80 updates that come down with your Office install. I came from a Windows imaging background before I joined Office, and Windows images tend to install in about 15 minutes or less. Office, once you've applied a service pack or two to it, all your updates can be an hour-long install easily.
Yeah.
And something isn't right when I can get something that basically fully uncompressed on the machine is about 13 gigs versus the fully uncompressed Office, about 2 gigs, is taking about 1/5 the time to install. So how do we make that better? How do we get this experience and kind of the part of the title of the session, how do we make deployment take 60 seconds or so to complete? Now, what I want to explain is basically how all of this stuff works. But I want to do a demonstration of kind of and make sure that I can deploy within 60 seconds. So if you want to switch me over to my demo machine here. We see it? All right, I've got my timer. It's set to 1 minute. I've got my click to run. I'm going to just click on that and see if I can get a click to run install of Office done in that 60 seconds and be able to launch an app. So here, just to prove I don't have Office installed, just to prove I'm not lying, I can go into my program files directory and I won't see an Office directory there.
You're going to start the installation in approximately a minute, you're going to be able to start working.
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and click open on that, and I'm going to move as quickly to that start button as I possibly can, just to make it a fair race, because I want to make sure I can get an Office experience running, again, using all local resources without, you know, the typical streaming remotely using an RDS connection or something like that on my machine. So I'm going to go ahead and click open, move over to my start menu, because it's a super tight race. I had to time this before I wrote the session title to make sure that I can get Office experience running on this machine.
So while this is running, one of the things, a huge point that I make to customers, is this is huge value for IT, and here's why. Think of the last time you deployed an MSI version of Office. What happened? You probably took upwards of 2 years to get fully that deployed in your organization, depending on the size of your organization. That's because as an IT pro, you had to go around and do all this app testing and remediation, compatibility testing, and it really put a huge strain on you getting Office and the value of that Office that you own in the hands of your users.
This is going to be a tight race here. We've got about 15 seconds left.
So I wanted to see.
So now basically what the cool thing is I can get Office running on the computer. I could have a previous install of Office, and we'll show that in a second, already running on the machine. I could be using that previous install of Office, and look how close this is. There it is.
You did it.
So there we go, exactly in 60 seconds. It was
down to the wire.
It wasn't, trust me, it wasn't as planned as it looked like. But I knew it would be about 60 seconds. We've actually done on our Garage Series show, we do a skydiver. We push him out of the plane after we click the install button to see if we can get him to get Office running before he opens his parachute. And 90 seconds he has during free fall. So he had a 30-second advantage, but a little bit slower machine.
Right.
It's part of the important thing here to also note is that it's going to depend. In this case, we have it on our local network, the local virtual network, stored, because I can store the source files of Office 365 Pro Plus in a local network. I can have all of that running completely local without even talking to the cloud for the whole install. I can have it running off the C drive if I want to, and all of that, I'll say no thanks to the Customer Experience Improvement Program. All of that's basically running then for my local device if I want it to, or for my local network, or it can run from the content delivery network, the CDN, from Office 365. It's my choice.
Yeah.
I can also choose what version I want to deploy. So all of that stuff we've done, and I'll show you all the controls here in a second, because you're going to want to see all the things that we can do from an IT pro level in terms of controlling those experiences. So let's move back to our Surface Pro. Actually, no, let's continue this demo here. So I want to show side-by-side. I think side-by-side is important enough to show
it's
all of
huge.
This. So again, if you're a developer or if you're an IT pro and you don't want to worry about whether or not that Excel spreadsheet with all those macros is going to work or not for the first 1,000 users that you deploy to, the great thing is we can actually have side-by-side installs working. I'm just going to go ahead and start a 2010 install just to kind of race it against our MSI package and see whether or not I can install 13 copies, as we see here. faster than I can install that one on a machine. By the way, it's already got 2013 installed, so I'll be able to have side-by-side running even on this one computer. But one thing we'll notice straight off the bat, this is our Catalyst setup engine. It takes almost as long as it took that 60 seconds to get it to the point where I can even hit the Install Now button to get all of that running.
So from an IT pro perspective, you're basically saying, hey, we have control. You can opt, and this is a very popular question that I get in the field. You can opt to say, hey, we don't want every machine in my organization to go out to the cloud, our content delivery network, to pull down the Office 365 Pro Plus bits. You can use the Office deployment tool to go and pull those click-to-run bits down to your local servers, put it closer to your users, right? Distribute it throughout the organization if you want in local servers, and then kick off the install there. So you literally are having no computers in your organization reaching out through the cloud to install. They're all coming from a local server, but you reap the benefits of what Jeremy's showing here, the side-by-side support. And so this trickles down to huge value for your end user as well, because guess what? Let's say they have a report they open up once a month, and they open it up 4 months after, four months after you've deployed, and you've got a transition period where you're going to allow side-by-side to be on that machine for 6 months. So they open up this report, and there's some compatibility issue. We don't see those hardly at all, but let's just say for giggles that there are. They're going to pick up the phone and call the help desk, and the help desk is going to say, hey, same answer for every time you call me with something that's not working. Go use the previous install. All your add-ins are there, right? So 2007, 2010, all the things that you would expect and that were working before we deployed the new Office and threw it over the wall to you will work fine with the previous version until we remove it, knowing, and we have telemetry built into Office.
One of the great additional benefits as part of this, and it's only part of basically our managed builds of Office 365 Pro Plus, Office Professional Plus 2013 and Standard, is the fact that we can use telemetry to monitor what's going on. So even if I have this concern of compatibility, which typically doesn't materialize to anything that actually breaks.
Right.
I would say the fear level's up here, because Windows and IE and all the history that we have maybe between those two products, coming from Windows, I hope I can say that. And then the Office compatibility issues are somewhere down here, but your fear is usually up at the high level of, oh my gosh, what if something breaks?
You don't want to disrupt business. Happens.
But the nice thing is with this, you've got a way to go back, you can validate and test, you can get telemetry to actually read application crashes, anything that might happen with your add-ins, with your macros, whatever you have running, and get that information and collect that from the first wave of users that you're deploying to. I can also do things like pause the build that I don't, if I don't want to continue to get automatic updates from the cloud, I can pause that, and I could do quarterly updates if I want to. I can control the version, turn off automatic updates, or I can tell it to look for my servers, my location for updates. I might get a bit more sophisticated and have it look for a System Center Config Manager distribution point for those updates so I can actually manage that and fan those out over a multinational organization. All of that stuff I can do, kind of like I would do in the Office 2010 or the Office 2013 MSI days in terms of managing that. So I've got complete control over how it's installing, the version that's installing, the add-ins that I'm layering on top of that, all that stuff I can control here in this case.
Now, one change is in the MSI version, if you're an IT pro, you used to use the Office customization tool probably to go in and modify and change some of the portions of Office, right, to change the settings, et cetera. Now you have the configuration,
the Office deployment, Office deployment tool for click to run with a configuration XML file, and you've got all the group policy that you ever had from an Office MSI standpoint. If you want to use those ADMX files. All of those 2264, I think, settings that you can set in the Office 2013 MSI build, they're the identical same settings that you'd have in a Office 365 Pro Plus build.
So group policy, config XML.
Right.
So when we first shipped Click to Run, right, or Office 365 Pro Plus, one of the differences in MSI in Office 365 Pro Plus is Office 365 Pro Plus, you didn't have a lot of options as to, let's say there was an app that you didn't want to have installed, right? So there's some exciting news about that.
Yes, we're going to break some news for all 1,000 of you in the room that only you will hear first. This is how you make announcements, everybody. We will basically have net new functionality in terms of Office 365 Pro Plus and the ability to unselect applications, because it was an all or nothing proposition. And if I didn't want access, msaccess.exe, There are some customers, I don't know why, but some customers don't want groove.exe to show up on home machines and synchronize files to home computers. Those types of things I can turn off. Let's say I don't want to have InfoPath. We were presenting in the during the garage series in the booth the other day.
Yeah.
A funeral procession was going past us as we were taping.
Joel Olson, I think, was leading
us. Yes, with InfoPath saying that was coming to an end. So maybe I don't want to have any additional net new dependencies on InfoPath, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to want to turn that off and not install it. So these types, maybe I don't want to install Outlook. I don't know. I don't know why I wouldn't, but Outlook is one of those great apps that you probably want on every device. But if you didn't want to install, I can turn anything off there and have that control. So that was the biggest thing that we heard. The other things that we were hearing in terms of updates to click to run, what if I'm installing behind a proxy server? What if the initiator of setup.exe has access to where the source is? Let's say I've got an internal source share. But what we do with setup.exe is we pass the installer process from the initiator to the system account. Why? Because we want to make sure that non-admins can continue to get Office updates, can continue to run all the things that they would need to run. And also, we want to make sure that it works on any profile. Whoever's launching Office from that machine, it will be able to service itself from an activation, from a software update standpoint. All that stuff continues to run. The problem with that is the integrated Office.exe process pre-SP1 would move to that system process. And if that system account didn't have access to those files, and you guys are SharePoint people, so you guys know all about permissions, then you wouldn't be able to continue the install. So you'd get failures without being able to stream past about 10% typically. Now we do user mode streaming, so even if I'm on a, if I'm behind a proxy server, if I've just got a local initiator of the process rights to get to that source path, I'll be able to continue streaming Office until it's fully cached on the machine.
Yeah, let's dig in a hair bit more on updating, because I think there's some other things that are worth sharing. So there's some questions that I typically get from customers. So we stream the bits using AppV. One of the points I think we need to land is the fact that you don't need MDOP for Office 365 Pro Plus. That's a question I typically get, because we package the first 10%. Am I right there? The first 10% of the setup is putting the dependencies that it needs on that machine.
That's roughly when we set up the virtual file system. Get the equivalent of what would, if you had AppV, be the AppV agent that does the virtual file system handling on the machine. Then after that, it's basically doing a file copy. A lot of times people ask me, why is it so much faster even to get Office fully cached on a machine? Let's say I'm at RTM. At RTM, I've got no updates, no service packs, nothing, and it might be a 7 or 10 minute install. And that's really the fastest install that you'll ever see of the MSI. That day that we call at RTM, I think it was October 21st, 2012. That day, it's pretty fast. Once I get later and later on, after I'm adding service packs and updates and all that, it might be from 7 minutes to 48 minutes.
Right.
With Click to Run, we're basically putting a cumulative set of the up-to-date build on that machine. We're basically setting up the virtual file system and then copying everything there. All of that compressed file set, it's like an image. It's like a Windows image. We just have to do a 500 or 600 meg file copy. And then after that, it's up and running. And it's basically going to be that 1 or 2 minute install experience, however long it took you the first time, throughout the entire product lifecycle. So it's pretty cool stuff in terms of not getting slower and slower and slower over time. And you can control the updates. You can roll back to builds. A lot of people ask us, what if something breaks in those automatic updates and I can't get back to yesterday's build because Microsoft did something in the CDN, they've published a build to go back. We can actually control that through our deployment processes. Now, what I want to do is I want to show all of the different deployment tools that you have as an admin in Office 365 to actually turn Office 365 Pro Plus on or off.
Yep.
Things like Office On Demand that we saw earlier, we can turn those on or off as well. So let me go back to my Surface Pro. I think that's 5, right?
Yep.
Let me go back here. So here was our Office On Demand launch point. Now I can go back into my kind of my admin central page for Office 365. And so if I want to go to service settings, I can either do it here, or I've got a tab already open just for quickness. I can turn off self-install. If I want to turn off installation from a user standpoint of Office or Link, oops. That wasn't the button I wanted to push, because it didn't really matter, because it was a volume button. I can turn off self-install of Office or Link or Project or whatever I've got as a self-installable package. I can also do that stuff for what I want to do in terms of Office for Mac. I have capabilities there in terms of enabling, disabling that as well, what I want them to install. And I have basically all of that. A lot of people turn that off. Why would they turn that off? Let's say I don't even want somebody on their home machine, again, to install groove.exe or to install msaccess.exe on that home computer and somehow get dependencies there, because he might be crafty and think, okay, well, IT is not going to let me do a self-install using System Center and the Software Center to install Office, but maybe I'm going to go home and log into my environment and do a self-install. The cool thing is, with this, I can basically remove that link to install Office from his machine if I want to.
Yep.
In that way, and a lot of universities do this, a lot of people who want to actually have the files stored with that, maybe do a small wrapper in terms of a bootstrapper that has the configuration file next to the setup.exe, I want them to install on their home machines everything but groove.exe, or everything but groove.exe and Access, or that and InfoPath. That I can do now in terms of being able to control what goes on those machines. Likewise, if I go into the SharePoint site, I'll be able to, if I want to, turn off things like Office on Demand. So if I go into settings here, and let's say I've got a Citrix or Citrix RDS environment, and I don't want people doing Office on Demand because every user profile is going to get a 600 megabyte package to every profile of the 30 to 50 that are running on that box, I can disable Office on Demand just by clicking this radio button. So that's one easy thing I can do to get rid of that if I want to not have people use Office on Demand. So I'm in control. That's a global tenant switch, though. I think that's important to point out in terms of whether or not I want that to run. If we go back to service settings, we also see there are links to the, let's go back to software. There are also links to the Office deployment tool for Click to Run. So if I go into, manually deploy.
While you're here, there's another question I get quite a bit, which is about 64-bit Office, right? The default is always 32-bit.
There we go. Download and customize. So that link will take you to the Office deployment tool for Click to Run. Yes, 64 and 32-bit. We still recommend 32-bit in most cases,
but even on a 64-bit hardware. Is available.
But you can install 64-bit. And one thing that's, if you want to actually see, we do a lot of work to obfuscate the 64-bit package just in case you do hit that self-install page. And you want to install software, we make it really hard for a user to find that. So they have to go here, and they have to click the Advanced tab, and then that will give them a drop-down for 32 or 64-bit. So even if a user says, I've got a 64-bit machine, and you and I all know this, because we all know how WoW 64 works on Windows, but not everybody out there that uses a PC knows that 64-bit doesn't mean that I should be installing 64-bit natively compiled software. This basically defaults to 32-bit because most add-ins, most of the customizations out there are still 32-bit. All right, so what does the Office deployment tool do? And I want to actually show how I can do exclude, because I want to do a demo of this brand new capability to exclude apps that you will see here first as the first, 6,000? 6,000 people to see it. Not everybody who's watching the live telecast at home. The brand new install.
And let's pick on
Office.
A different app. Most people, for whatever reason, I think because of past pains with Access in the old days, the whole, I have a server or a desktop running Access, running the business. Let's maybe pick on Outlook.
Okay, we can do that. So here I have a very secret, not yet released build of the Office deployment tool for Click to Run. And I have the right build of Office to be able to wield that new capability of excluding apps. So if I want to exclude Outlook, let's say I don't want to exclude Groove, because we just launched the OneNote standalone. I know all of the Microsoft guys watching are saying, why is it still called Groove.exe? And I'm one of them. I can take that and move that to Outlook. So if I don't want to install Outlook, there we go. I'll go ahead and save that. Now, just to show that this machine doesn't have Office on it, you'll see there are no Office, no tricks here in terms of what I'm showing. Because it will take a little bit longer, I think, than we had in terms of this machine. This hosted machine that I ran with the 60 seconds is running off of a very fast solid-state drive that's running off of a PCI Express bus, and it's extremely fast compared to the Surface. Not anything against the Surface. But we'll get all of this installed to happen in probably about 2 minutes from a local stored set of files. So now, demo gods permitting, again, we're in pre-alpha code of this Office deployment tool. You'll see a couple of things. I'm going to go ahead and do kind of a little bit of behind-the-scenes play-by-play here, if you do know Click to Run. The Office click-to-run setup process is running. And one of the things that, if I go into properties, it'll let me go to properties, is that you'll notice that we changed the executable from integratedOffice.exe to OfficeClickToRun.exe. Some of the things that we've done as part of that,
I like that.
Some of the things that we've done as part of that, it's basically about the stability enhancements we've done in terms of first initial application install, user mode streaming, the ability to install behind proxy servers, all that stuff, and along the lines of software updates, because we've also done some things in the past, pre-SP1, we would take essentially a software update and we would discover it and download that to a machine, but we wouldn't apply it if it wasn't plugged into power. And that might have been a good assumption to make before all of the new machines had 10 hours of battery life and could probably live with a 3-hour window of time to install the Office updates. So we've done things like check for battery level and make sure that they're 30% or higher before we install the update. Update typically takes about 2 or 3 minutes tops to install. We don't need to have 100% battery and plugged in to do that. We've also done better things in terms of notifications to end users. So if you have a person, I like to call them serial sleepers, who never ever close the Office apps and never ever allow that those handles to those files that need to be updated get closed and be able to reapply new binaries to them, we will inform the user, hey, you've been sitting on an update for a couple of weeks now. You might want to close your Office apps to apply that update. We can do that for you. And if we hit apply, we'll take them right back to where he left off and continue working. We don't want them sitting on a stale build after I've pushed an update out for 3 weeks just because the guy never ever closes his apps. He just sleeps his machine every night. He's never actually had to reboot his machine. As great as that is from the user perspective sometimes, it's something that we want to make sure that we can manage to apply the security updates that we need to. All right, so I just saw my taskbar icons reflash, which probably means that there are some Office apps in my start menu. Let's hope that we're there. There we go. So we have Outlook. We have SkyDrive Pro because I let it install Groove, remember? We don't have Outlook.
Outlook is gone.
So Outlook is gone. This is the first time this has ever been shown publicly, by the way.
So first, click to run demo.
Feel free to applause all 1,000 of you. it's the first time we've seen that. So InfoPath,
gone.
If I could play Taps or something, that's not there. But if you don't believe me, nice. If you don't believe me, I can even go into the file system, which I've conveniently put a link to the file system here, and don't pay attention to the Office version that's up there, because this is a pre-release, non-public build of Office. You will see that msaccess.exe is nowhere to be found. Now, one of the things, if you're using, and I get this question a lot, if you're using application virtualization and that user is really crafty and he knows exactly where to find msaccess.exe in the file system, even if I exclude access in app B, with app B infrastructure, that msaccess.exe executable is still there on the local file system. And he could launch it, and he could build an access database, and he could make the IT department really upset in doing so. Here, that executable is completely gone, so he can't even launch it if he tries. Now, I've installed basically the apps I want. And that was the major thing that we had that was kind of outside of parity from an MSI install time thing. So, again, you've seen it here first.
Well, and the other big, huge value add, if you think about it long term, a lot of our customers and our IT pros, an end user, this is good for everybody, IT pro, developer, end user, there's this term that everybody's starting to use, evergreen, right? So you'll now notice in Office 365 Pro Plus, when you launch Word, it just says Word. It doesn't say Word 2010, doesn't say Word 2007. It just says Word, and for the reason, you're going to hear us talk less and less about upgrades and more about updates. And so I think one great point that we should also discuss is, if you haven't kept up with it, there's a website that I maintain, office-411.com. There's an IT pro section. I keep a running list, very easy to consume, of all the updates we've released in Office 365 since June of last year. And it is extremely compelling. So those aren't just fixes, right, or security updates. These are compelling capabilities that we're bringing to market. Things like app exclusion, right, that we just will expose to our end users and our IT pro brethren as we see the demand for those things coming to us, right? So
right. It's
very important to know that that's exclusive to Office 365 Pro Plus. If you're in the MSI model, you're waiting for another service pack. By the time we release, let's say Office, 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that's what it'll be labeled, but if you're in this model, you'll already have all those capabilities by the time someone is deploying the next major version of Office.
And one thing, if you're paying attention and you see that the install limit was reached, what happens is, in that case, because I get the question a lot, what if I've got a sixth install? Granted, there aren't a lot of people out there with more than six machines, except for me.
A great demo.
Maybe you. I don't have Curtis Sawin's creds to get into his account. But the thing is, this link will take me right to Office 365 to activate or deactivate. We happen to have stored creds to get all this demo to work, just because we got all that to work with a bunch of engineers sitting over, or standing over our shoulders as we were filming this for kind of the public show that's on the garage. But what I can do once I have clicked on this, assuming that I'm Jeremy and not Curtis, what will happen is it will go right to my software page directly, so the user can see exactly what he has installed. If he does have a machine that, say, he lost, or he has deprovisioned because he doesn't use it anymore, he's sold it to somebody and he wants to get rid of that, or maybe the machine's broken, he's dropped it, he's done something, he can deactivate a copy of Office and he can reactivate for that sixth machine. He could have a pool of 10 machines if he wanted to. It will directly link him to this portal. You've got this credentials stored. It will basically show that portal without him even to log in, especially if it's federated on a Windows. You know, if you got ADFS running, it will just go right into that portal for you. And you can deactivate that sixth, that seventh, that eighth, that ninth machine.
Yeah, and all that's possible, right? Because one of the big differences, I just thought about this, is the activation model, right? So in MSI, you activate with KMS or Mac, your Mac keys. Here, we are activated using your online subscription.
Yes, and because of that, I can basically swap out. I can have the machines that I care about and use activated simultaneously. I can have that five that I typically use there. I can cycle through more and more machines if I want to. And trust me, I do this myself all of the time. Like I said, I brought eight machines with me. I think five of them are qualifying Mac/Windows devices. So I'm going through all of these things quite often and making sure that I have at least one activation free. So I can typically see all the, I can actually name the different devices that I have here in terms of where everything's installed, and I can easily reassign that activation to another machine, whether it's PC or Mac. One of the nice things from mobile OS perspective, if you've got Office Mobile on Android or iOS, you don't even see this. It just continues to activate. Now, one of the secrets and one of the things that you guys are IT folk, developers, IT pros in the audience, we don't actually have that five hard limit in terms of how many mobile devices that you have, because you don't have this portal to deprovision your applications. So we have a fairly high number. We don't divulge that number, but it's a fairly high number that's between, reasonably high and abusing the system that I like to classify as something that's in the upper 2 to 3 digit range in terms of the number of things that you could activate. So if you want to send out your credentials of Office 365 to all of your countrymen and you live somewhere where piracy is very rampant, we'll eventually see that after, a few tens of installs and start shutting down the additional activation. If you're a normal person who might have under 30 devices, you will never, ever see your limit. So it's one of those things where, again, it's kind of like on the Windows side. When we first started out, I think they went from 5 installs on Windows Store apps to 88, I believe, or 81 or something.
Yeah.
That's something that they've done as well to lift that limit. So I don't really have this limit I'm ever going to hit. As long as I can prove I am who I say I am, I can install on those mobile devices from a kind of paper licensing standpoint. Yes, you are limited to 5, but no, there's not a console like this to trim down to my 5 that I want to be using at that point in time. So that was kind of the IT pro side, the Office deployment tool. We can, if I wanted to go into the kind of the gory details of how all of that works, and I do have the 48-slide deck that has all of the configuration XML properties. I actually prefer, though, to go into the configuration XML TechNet article that gives me a reference of all those things, because I can do stuff like stipulate a version number. I can exclude apps as of the release that's coming in the next couple of months. It will either be there in the April or May update. All of the stuff I can do the languages, the apps I want to deploy, like the SKUs themselves, if I want to put Project or Visio or other things in there, all of that is very well documented right on TechNet, and I would encourage you to look at that. Or if you want to download the 48-slide deck, it should be on the MySPC site at some point to show that as well. So I want to take any questions that you have from either a user, a developer, or an IT pro perspective, because we think, again, that the user experience, being able to use any device, whether it's iOS, whether it's Android, whether it's Windows 8, is an awesome value proposition. And being able to have, from a developer perspective, code that can be executed on all those different platforms, anything that has a browser in it, essentially, that can show an iframe, is also a great developer value prop. And for IT pros, having all the controls around how I deploy Office, whether or not I allow Office on demand, updates for whether or not I want to update Office 365 Pro Plus, how I want to configure it during the install, if I want to use things like System Center and scripted tools like we saw in the 13 machine install demo, where, by the way, we really massively beat the install time of the 2010 install.
Right, always.
As we always do. The 60-second install that we saw before we could launch our first app, all the stuff that we can do from an IT pro and end-user perspective, and don't forget side-by-side and running all of your applications from an extensibility standpoint, we see that as a huge thing to help IT pros, to help developers, to help end-users really adopt the new Office 365 Pro Plus. And I think you've got something here you want to show.
Yeah, I was just going to show, like, if you know, again, one of the things with the updates, and when you think of this evergreen approach to Office, if you go to this website, office-411, here's a running total list of all the capabilities that we've introduced going all the way back to June of 2013. And so you can see some really compelling capabilities there as you scroll through.
We can see them if you stop scrolling for a second. But
yeah,
yes,
I know, but I wanted to.
All of these things that we've done, because we're iterating on the releases, we're iterating on things that are exclusive, again, to subscribers. If you think about all of the mobile apps, all of that came out in the July-August timeframe last year. You know, we've talked about even more mobile coverage coming. We've got Yammer clients on basically every platform. We've got SkyDrive Pro clients on other platforms. All the stuff that we're doing, Office Remote even as an app to control Word documents, PowerPoint slides from your Windows phone. We just continue to add more and more stuff and more capabilities. Let's go back to our PowerPoint slide, because we still haven't. More and more capabilities to Office. And the way to get these capabilities, and the first way to get them, to get to those capabilities, and things like PowerMap, which are exclusive to Office 365 Pro Plus, the path to that and the path that we recommend, let's go back to this one, is that you use Office 365 Pro Plus as the means to consume Office.
What number is that? I'm sorry.
I believe that is the number
eight. Eight.
Android.
Got it.
So with that, I will conclude on my PowerPoint deck and advance to my second slide. Hopefully that was few enough PowerPoint slides for this show. So thank you all for turning out. I know it's right before the NASCAR and Danica Patrick and all these things that we have. I'm going to be there tonight. We're going to actually be filming all of that. I'm going to bring a bunch of GoPros to try to apply to the cars so we can do some crazy things, maybe some extreme installs again like we do for our shows. But we look forward to seeing you tonight. Thank you for being here, all 1,000 of you. Have a great week. The rest of Tech Ed, but it's actually SharePoint Conference. Sorry. Please clip that from the recording. SBC 14. And yeah, we've got more content at the garage and the office booth, so I'd encourage anybody, if they want to learn about things like Oslo, we've got a full deep dive session on that coming tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and we've got also, we did a OneDrive session today. We've got lots of great content there all week from 12 to 2 p.m., so please have a look at that. And again, we'll be at the party tonight, so thank you all for being here, and have a great rest of SPC 14. Thank you.
Thank you.